This is a Defocus Media production.
This is Lunch Day with Rachel and Kate, a Defocus Media production. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Kate. How are you, dear friend?
I'm good. I've missed you. It's been forever.
Yeah, it has been.
So much in the world has happened.
Yeah. I mean, I just wanted to say thank you to all of those that reached out to us with just like ways for us to become better from our last podcast. I mean, like we said, we're just really trying to figure out ways to be good allies and to be a good person. And so we just thank you for those that reached out to us in ways to become better because we really want to become better. We
thank
appreciate
you.
That.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about your life. How is...
Yeah.
What does your life look like?
My life looks different than it did before lockdown. Did you know that people from your state, if they come to my state, they have to quarantine for 2 weeks?
Yes.
We have that rule for 14 different states right now.
Yeah, and Kansas is really bad, so Kansas is on most people's list.
Man, oh man. Mm-hmm. It's like, we got lazy, I think.
Yes.
Like we went from being fully on lockdown to going through yellow phase, and now we went to green phase. But green phase means you still have to wear a mask and like you can't gather in crowds of more than 250 people. But that's almost not going to cut it. Like life is different now. We have to be different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in Kansas, a lot of people have taken wearing masks as something where it is a way to suppress people rather than to help people. So a lot of people don't like to wear masks, especially where I live. Even though we are one of the epicenters in Kansas, we are actually the city that's on the rise in Kansas. Mm. So I like went to Quick Trip the other day, which is a gas station here, and the staff was wearing masks. And I was the only customer that was. And so you can get a lot of fines and stuff. So I found the hotline so that I can like call as I see these things happening, being like, and it says all over the door, like face masks are required. And I feel bad because it's like these like 19-year-old kids that are
trying
like, working the counters.
It.
Yeah. And it's like, they don't want to yell because I mean, people, some of these crazy videos are from people in Kansas that are like freaking out. So, yeah, so it's been really difficult. So Evan and I have had two COVID scares where we've thought people around us have had COVID, but then ended up turned out to be negative.
It's so scary.
Draining. Yeah. And I mean, especially like if one of us get it, both of our works shut down for 2 weeks. Like it's not. So we are, and we don't get paid, you know, like I don't get paid for 2 weeks.
I'm really worried. Like I'm worried that I'm going to get it and not know it and give it to somebody, or I'm going to get it and I'll survive it, but I'll die when I'm 60 from some like blood clot or something. Like I'm worried
like,
this is going to like
complication.
Shorten our lifespans. And I'm not just worried for myself, obviously, but like on some level, I'm worried for myself.
Yeah. No. And like, cause you put yourself in other people's shoes too. Like it's,
yeah.
And so, yeah, it's definitely been difficult. And then with Black Lives Matter's protest, I've been a part of several, and our police chief is a pretty good dude. He still doesn't have everything figured out, but he's willing. He's like really willing to partner with the community to figure out how to do good things. So I had a lot of hard conversations lately.
Tell me more.
My Evan's grandfather was one of the top police officers in the Wichita Police Department. He was on the BTK task force and a lot of those things. So, so like really cool dude. And he was there in the 70s when there was a lot of also anti-police kind of world going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, because it was right with Vietnam and that kind of era as well. So, we struggle a lot because we have several friends that are on the police force. Because I believe that there should be less funding for police and more funding into other programming within the community.
I absolutely agree with you.
I agree with that. But I also believe that there should be a way to have people held accountable either in the community and in the police department, all of those things. Like there needs to be an accountability in place. Because when something goes wrong, I don't know what this looks like, but I want to be able to call someone and be able to have somebody come help me out. Something, and I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer. I don't know what that looks
but
like.
But you don't have to have an answer. There are people that have answers.
Exactly.
And it doesn't have to be us figuring this out. Yeah. We just need to be willing to find the resources for people who have already figured it out. Like, there's this argument that people are making, and I'm not saying you're making this argument because you have proven to be on the right side of everything this entire time, and it's been really good. But, like, people will say, like, well, what's going to happen if that? And just because they haven't figured it out doesn't mean someone else hasn't.
Exactly.
Like, one person doesn't have all the knowledge in the friggin' world.
Uh-huh. And sometimes I carry that responsibility where I feel like I have to be the one that carries all that knowledge and that responsibility. I think that was a good point to say, hey, no, I don't have to carry all that knowledge and responsibility. So I'm reading a lot. I'm right now reading How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram Kendi. I mean, you inspired me by reading Stamped from the beginning last year.
Oh yeah, that was so good.
And so I haven't read that book yet. And then Evan and I are going to work through Me and White Supremacy here soon. Because I just want to be able to emotionally sit down and work through things. And so sometimes I need to be able to take a second and be able to say, nope, this is what I'm starting, because I need to be able to, I want to be available to work through this.
Yeah.
So I don't know. So that's where my heart and my life is right now, is working through how to be my best self and all of these things and staying home to do that.
Yes. Staying home is so important.
And wearing my mask and doing things of that nature. And, supporting others that wear their masks and supporting people that are in great things. But speaking of people that are doing great things, I'm so excited for our guest today. Obi Malobi is just phenomenal. I followed him on Facebook. Well, he added me on Facebook a long time ago and I was like, who's this dude? But he seemed cool, so I added him. Good thing I did. I just feel so fortunate that we have someone of this caliber willing to talk to us.
Yeah, seriously.
I'm just really excited for this conversation with him. So tune in and enjoy.
Yay!
Hello. Oh my gosh. So I am so excited today to interview with Rachel.
Hi.
The beautiful person of Obi Malobi. He is so dynamic with everything he does, especially with a lot of his innovative products and solutions. So he owns and the manager and everything wonderful, a part of Vision Street. So I also wanted to highlight his other incredible platform, Africa. So it's like I and then F-R-I-C-A, so like Africa, but with I at the beginning. Just an incredible person that we get to have with us today. Obi, welcome. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And how are you two amazing, inspiring doctors doing? I must say, I've been following your work over the last couple of years, and I'm truly inspired and highly motivated by the incredible work that the two of you are doing in America and, of course, the rest of the world.
Aw, well, we're so fine. And the inspiration goes both ways. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I think this is just such a cool meeting of the minds, because all three of us have such a passion for making the eye care industry better. I want to introduce what we're having for lunch today.
Oh yeah. What's on the menu?
Yeah. So what's on the menu today is pizza. And this is Obi's favorite food, but here I come with my long-winded analogy for this. So with pizza, we have so many different components. The crust, and that is just the hard foundation. And then the sauce, you can have so many different kinds, but it brings all the ingredients together as another base. And then you can pick your cheeses or non-cheese if that's something that you want. And then the toppings are endless. So I think it's just kind of, we are bringing all these different components together to bring a wonderful pizza pie to the world.
Okay, let's dig in.
Obi, you do so much. What inspired you to start Vision Street? What inspired all of this to kind of begin your own endeavor?
Thank you very much for the question. It's very simple for me. While studying optometry, I've always worked in various eye care practices. And the question that came to mind was, what makes the ideal optometric practice? And so the answer we managed to derive was that optometry consists of three components, if you think about it. You have the academic side, which involves research, learning, and the scope of practice of optometry. Then you've got clinical, which entails problem identification and solving, professional skills development, and of course, very important, patient education. And lastly, you have the business side of optometry, which revolves around exceeding turnover, practice management, and of course, business development. And so over the years, I discovered that for an optometry practice to experience massive success and exponential growth sales, all three aspects of optometry need to function efficiently and cohesively with one another. And so Vision Straight simply became the solution to that question that we had. It's been a very tough journey, I must say, but very, very interesting at the same time.
You can definitely tell that from the website. It's so impressive. You also run iFrica, a premier online website for eye care professionals in Africa. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so I connected with Dr. Daryl Glover from America a couple of years ago.
Heard of him.
Of course. He's incredible. He took my title. I'm so jealous because he calls himself your favorite optometrist. And I'm so angry at that because I feel like that was my title before he came up with it. But I did just let it be.
It was.
He doesn't want me to say this anyway. But anyway, we connected on social media a couple of years ago. And we both realized that we share the same values and passion for the eye care industry. As time went by, we both had a great desire and passion to see eye care on the African continent grow to greater heights. And how iAfrica Media came about was that we realized that there is no centralized platform that connects various eye care professionals or connects eye care as a whole on the African continent. So we developed this incredible platform as a gateway to eye care on the African continent. And we literally using this platform for suppliers, service providers, ECPs to all have a voice whereby they're speaking content, they're speaking information, they're speaking knowledge or sharing knowledge that is relevant and specific to the African continent.
Wow, that is so cool. I mean, like, okay, because first of all, let's talk about how, like, when we talk about eye care, we're like, oh, in our country, like, you literally just talked about eye care on an entire continent. Like, let's just discuss that for a second, like, how incredible that is.
That's amazing.
It's really fantastic because the thing about it is that you find that in certain parts of the continent, eye care is regulated. In other parts of the continent, it's not regulated. How distribution works, how merchandising works, access to various technological advancements, how all of that works is different from one country to the next. And so with iAfrica Media, it connects all of that and it simplifies the work that suppliers or service providers need to do in getting their products and their solutions in those various parts of the continent. And so the excitement around this platform is really incredible in terms of the opportunities that exist for ECPs on the continent, connecting with suppliers from all over the world and having relevant solutions for the most important people, which are the patients that need eye care related services.
Wow.
You like, really thought of everything.
Yeah. Like, I think, could you just like manage my brain for me? Because you really do think of everything and kind of like pull all those pieces together. Like, I'd love to give you just like so many thoughts. And then you just kind of like,
I think he's got enough on his plate.
He do. Amen. This is true. This is amen. But like, I'm in. That was like a really big ask and coming back from that. Okay. Okay. So you do so much in the business world. You do so much on helping eye care professionals all over the world understand their business side. And so as you've heard from Rachel and I, we're super passionate about kind of the personnel side of optometry and in eye care. So you've got your staff, you have associate optometrists, you have all these things. And we're really passionate about the wage gap, especially about between men and women and kind of creating the change so that there's no gap there, that everybody just gets paid equally. So you have a lot of good things for employers. So for business owners,
yes.
Kind of what advice do you have for them as Rachel and I are currently just associate optometrists with big dreams of maybe being, you know, owners, employers one day. What advice do you have for us and others in that position to help figure out like, okay, how do I budget for a position to bring on a technician, an optometrist, an optician, anything that looks like, how do you look into your world and be like, okay, I should bring somebody on. No, I don't need to. This is a big question. So answer with as much or as little as you have for here.
Perfect. It's such a critical question because the way it works in eye care, you find that we all have this problem taking place all over the world. If I look at South Africa or where you guys are at in America, you find that a lot of optometric practices have this tendency of hiring cheap labor and not taking into consideration that if you hire cheap labor at the beginning or you're not willing to pay for the expertise that your practice deserves or needs in order for it to function at a particular level, you're going to end up paying the the costs or seeing the consequences of that at a later stage. And it ends up bringing out the worst out of people, and that they don't end up contributing anything worthwhile to the optometric practice at the end of the day. And even though they're working there, they're constantly going to be looking out for new opportunities elsewhere. And so one of the decisions that employers have to make from the onset with regards to their businesses is hire the best. Because when you hire the best and are willing to pay for the best, you set your business apart from having an opportunity to ensure that that best that you have hired is going to bring the best to the business. And so new employees, for example, need direction regularly. So what will your budget be for new employees that you take on, whether it be the technician, the dispensers, the administrative staff? You want to ensure that whoever that is new, you're going to be having to show them direction regularly. And that means training and development that's going to be very critical to them. So you have to allocate a budget that will also then be associated with any form of training and development so that they constantly upskill themselves in order to add value to your business. If you think of few months into the job employee, they need coaching. So you might have to consider that beyond what the practice provides, what else within the budget will we then have to cater for at a later stage? So those are some of the things that eye care practices or owners need to take into consideration when they're planning for a particular position within their practices.
That makes a lot of sense. How do you approach it when an employee asks you for a raise or something like that? Like, how do you feel about negotiating with your employees?
I think communication that has to take place in all eye care practices from the onset is that this is what the job entails. This is what is expected of you. And then you as an employee needs to then determine, what do I bring to the table or to the practice that exceeds expectations that are set for me? Once you have that awareness, you are putting yourself in an opportunity or in a position where you can negotiate better for yourself. And even if an employer who then has to answer those questions in terms of pay raises, and you come into that employer having clear specifications in terms of, this is what you hired me for, but this is what I have done over and above what you are paying me for currently. And for me, I feel that I'm adding more value into your practice than what you are expecting of me. And this is the value that I want to continue adding into your business going forward. And this is what I believe is my worth. So I think when the employer and employee have those type of conversations from the onset and have regular conversations which are uncomfortable, it makes those discussions around pay raises or pay deductions much, much more effective.
You said, you know, you've got to hire the best and you've got to know and you've got to be willing to pay for the best. And so if you just want to show up and you just want to work your 8 to 5 and go home, I think that's something that I still believe in, that you've got to negotiate of where you might be bringing better things to the practice, but really evaluating that, like, okay, what am I doing that is really bringing the difference here? As well as it gives you an opportunity to say, hey, look, you wanted the best. I'm here. Let's do something about it. So I just really like how that was such an impactful statement there.
The thing about it is that, just on that note, those discussions, they set the tone in the practice. So if you think about the day-to-day activities within an optometry practice, practices that function at the highest possible level have three things in common. Leadership is very strong, the vision of the practice is very clear, and the company culture is that which brings people together. And so if those three things are in place, it makes the discussions around pay rise or pay raise much easier. And people look forward to the working environment. People look forward to bringing their best when they know that they're going to be highly rewarded for the work that they're going to be producing. So I think that's one thing that I would encourage eye care practices that are listening into this, is that don't compromise in hiring and paying for the best.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Now as an employee, like, since I'm an associate optometrist right now that's being employed, I just see ways that I can continue to bring that culture and like amplify the vision of the practice and different things, just to continue feel like they can't do it without me, as well as that they don't want to, you know, because like you keep saying, like they don't want to do it without you when they hire the best, like they don't want to do this without you. And that's so, I think that's just such a, brings that culture back together where everybody feels supported and feels really together with things. And sometimes it's easy to think, when we suggest for people to negotiate, it's, we talk about how this is a great opportunity just to kind of see how the, how your potential boss and practice kind of works. Like, how does it all come together? And as you say, with that conversation, you can really see the vision of the practice and the culture of the practice on how they respond and how you work through that conversation. And you can see, okay, is this holding the standards of a really great practice? Or is this holding something where maybe I don't want to be a part of right now and I need to find a different place for me to be?
Definitely. Definitely.
Again, there's like so many, we've kind of talked about this, but I think if we just kind of focus in on it, like how important is your staff? Like how important are these pieces for your staff to, you know, are, how, if you had a rank, like, okay, here's the most important pieces of our practices. Like where does staff fall when you're hiring? Like where does, how does staff fit into the importance of how the practice runs?
This is my favorite question. You know why? Optometric practices don't realize that the most valuable asset that they have on in their business or operations is the team. You know, the team is the glue that makes everything work. You know, whether it be the technician, whether it be the front office staff, your team is what makes the practice work the way it's supposed to work. And so optometric practices need to realize that a staff can only go where the business owners are willing to take them. And the practice can only go to the point at which the team is willing to grow. And so if practices can understand that and capture that and live based on, wait a minute, guys, if we want to take our practice to the level it's got the potential of going, then we have to make sure that we are taking our team to the level at which they have or should be going. That's the only way it works. So a lot of the time, I've noticed, because we do a lot of training and development for various optometric practices on the continent, we have realized that practices that invest in developing their team are the ones that end up having the best team on board. And it's the team that makes the practice grow. And so there's four areas that, as a business owner, we encourage optometric practices to sort of like look at when they're growing their practices. The first one is that you have to ask yourself is, what components of your business offering can you improve tremendously that the consumers can notice and be interested in? So for example, timeframes for products to be ready or delivered, payment options and gateways available to the consumer, advanced technology on systems, processes, and equipment, increased communication platforms between the practice and the consumer, options to experience the product or product upgrades beforehand or before they're purchasing it, e-commerce platforms. That's the first sort of like question that optometric practices need to ask themselves. Then the second one is, what key areas of your business are distinctively unique to your practice as compared to the competition that they are not in a position to be doing or adding or are aware of in terms of their business offering? Are you providing any form of service delivery enhancements, services that they are not offering that you are offering? And so if you are, how do you go about harnessing that and ensuring that you are sort of like the person or the practice in relation to that? Thirdly, would be, what are you currently doing within or for your business to develop the team, increase your capacity as a practice, or enhance the business offering? How often, if I can put it this way, how often is training and development taking place? Online distance learning platforms that are available for your team to have access, or people and leadership development programs within the practice, business activation programs, sales training courses, new skills development courses. So those are some of the things that I believe that optometric practices need to be constantly getting trained on as regularly as possible so that the team is well equipped to take the practice to the level it's supposed to be. I don't know if I answered that correctly, but basically that's how we approach optometric practices in terms of the impact that the team plays, but all other components also play within the growth of their practices.
I have a thought that kind of came from this, is that you talked about, you know, giving an opportunity for people to grow, you know, like, okay, let's grow their skills so that this kind of, we can invest, these skills will be able to bring more business to us and we'll be able to grow our business. But I mean, this kind of is twofold. It goes back to the employee where they can say, look, I've done this work. Look how I've become essential to the practice, and use that as a negotiation tool. I think you can utilize this to grow the practice, but then in turn, it grows the person who can utilize that for whatever they're doing in their life. And kind of, and if, let's say they move on from the practice for multitudes of reasons, they take that knowledge with them and can utilize that in their next option. So it really is a twofold of building the practice and building the person to be able to create a really strong eye care partnership between the staff member and the practice.
A question that a lot of optometric owners will say, or have, will say, Obi, what if I train my staff and they go? And yeah. I always say to them is that don't train your staff for your practice. Train them for their development, because then you're setting the bar, or you're setting the standard of excellence for the practice so high that whether or not that person leaves or stays, the next person that comes in on that being the standard in the practice. And so optometric practice have to have a standard operating procedures manual that governs or details or guides every single component of the practice. And you find that people that are developed, opportunities get created for them within the practice, as opposed to them looking for opportunities outside of the practice. So optometric owners shouldn't be afraid of investing time, resources within the team, because that is the biggest investment that you can actually make. Long before the equipment, long before all these diagnostic procedures that we are all, as optometrists, constantly developing our skills on, we need to realize that all other components of the business, which involves the team, are just as important as your clinical or academic skills as the optometrist. So you need to bring everyone up with you, not just yourself. Who goes to conferences? Optometrists, not the staff. Why is it that the rest of the team don't have sort of like in communication opportunities or growth opportunities that are just as important or seen as important as the senior leadership within the practices?
Yeah.
Yes.
That makes now a lot of sense.
I'm like super motivated. I kind of want to start my own business like tomorrow.
I mean, seriously, he has like, such good advice. I mean, it's no wonder you have your own consulting company. Okay. So about your consulting company, how did you determine, like, how did you learn that you like had so much value to provide? Like, how did you know that you had such good advice to give, and how did you figure out how to charge for it?
Wow. I love the question.
Well, it's complicated.
Well, personally for us, the biggest mistake we made when we started was that we undervalued ourselves. And most importantly, we undervalued our value proposition or our unique selling proposition. So the industry was not receptive to what we were offering and thought we're not qualified to offer the solutions we said we are offering. So we ended up offering some of our services for free. Can you believe that? But luckily, it was not long where we changed our approach. So we targeted businesses that did not need our service. So that if that business owner with 20, 30 years experience employing a phenomenal team and seen as a key opinion leader or industry leader in a particular component within optometry, if that person can open their door for us and we can provide our services to them and transform their business and take it to another level, all we would then ask of would be a reference from that particular leader, so that though people that said no to us and said, nah, we don't need Vision Straight, when they saw that we worked with Dr. So-and-so, who they hold in high regard, and how that person's practice changed, all of a sudden, the question that came to their mind was, wait a minute, if that particular practice works with Vision Straight, who am I not to work with Vision Straight? So that clearly distinguished our value proposition, and we defined our value proposition based on the following components. Number one, the value that people should experience when they engage with Vision Straight. Number two, the products that we are offering. What sets our product offering apart from all other consulting firms? Number three, the services. It does not matter how great our services are. What's important is how our clients engage with our services. So we wanted to make sure that our services were as simple and easily understandable as we possibly can provide them to the various clients that we are dealing with. Next, it was our solution offering. Was our solution offering communicated as well and as easy as we possibly can? What do you notice a lot with experts within the field? You find that here's a contact lens expert, or here is a low vision expert, seen within the industry as an expert, but then they struggle to communicate their expertise to the younger generation, the millennials, various target audiences that are not affiliated with them. So we then saw an opportunity to position our solution offering to the different targeted audience within the eye care industry. Next was our location. How easily accessible are we to the various people that we are trying to provide services on? Next was our expertise. And how did we then distinguish our expertise? I decided to write books. So we've in less than 4 years, we have produced 4 books for the optometry industry. And the books were written in a manner in which they were practical. People can refer to them on a day-to-day basis within their practices. And whether it's a first-year student or a 30-year experienced practice owner, both of them could take something from the book. So the expertise that we had, we put them in the book and simplified the book. Next, it was building a trustworthy brand. And you can only build a trustworthy brand by sharing testimonies, sharing our story. And that's how we got to know you guys as well, is because we connected on social media. And so we ensured that what people see online versus what they experience when they see us at conferences or face-to-face, they get the same thing. And that was how we built a trustworthy brand. Next, our company culture. We wanted to ensure that we break through any cultural divide or dynamics that or barriers that might exist, whether it be locally here in South Africa or internationally. So, for example, I'm doing a conference next month or in a few months' time in Poland. I don't even know how to speak Polish, but I'm learning right now. So that when I get to that conference, I will be delivering my presentation using Polish words and phrases. That's how we create that company culture and breakthrough barriers. And
above and beyond.
And so, for example, think about how impactful that will be, because I'm a South African. English is not my first language. I speak Tswana. So if I get to Poland and I can connect with them in their way of thinking and doing things, imagine how impactful they will see our value proposition on the bigger scheme of things. And lastly was our leadership. It was not about me being this famous individual, but it was about how many young people can we lift up and bring to the forefront of what our offering is. So that's how we determined our value proposition. So when we decided to then charge various amounts for our services, we used that as our base point to say, but wait a minute, in this regard, this is what we bring to the table. Therefore, this is what we're going to be charging for it. So I don't know if I answered that as simple as I possibly could have, but basically that's what we did. And lastly, before I even forget, so all of that which I've just said, we made it very easy in terms of charging. We established a subscription-based service for the eye care industry. So a lot of practices that work with us, whether it be them needing training and development, marketing solutions, business activation programs, online platforms, whatever it is that they needed, they sign up with us for a 12-month process so that every single month they can hold us accountable to what we add value in their business on.
All of us forget about where our value is or what our value is or all of these different things, because you were like, I know I have this. And so you really knew your value and you stuck with it. I think that sometimes what we forget is we think our value is what others perceive us as, but you knew internally what you could bring and you never wavered from that. And that was, and that really shows through into how you guys do things now, is you were like, no, I know what I can bring. Just hear me out, kind of thing. And once you did that, I mean, it makes sense with your subscription and charging of people holding you accountable, because that's what you knew, you, what you needed and you wanted all along.
Yeah. Yeah.
It makes so much sense.
Now for the fun part.
Mm-hmm.
We have a few little rapid fire kind of questions that just, you know, just for funsies. So, are you ready? Kate, take it away.
Okay. One, tell us about, and this is just like a minute long answer, maybe if that. So tell us about a time that you negotiated.
Well, speaking engagements, I knew that I speak a lot at conferences. And so how I negotiated my speaking engagements is that I pre-recorded an online video of myself showing how much of an impact I will have to the audience or to the conference as a speaker. So I showed mm-hmm. them how dynamic and engaged I was. So I got my friends to be part of the video, and that was my speaker's video when I'm negotiating my fee for the speaking engagement. So that's basically something that I do, or I did when I started speaking at various conferences.
Awesome. Great advice. What is open to negotiation?
Oh, very simple. It's the price is going to always be cheaper when we've got a long-term relationship or business relationship versus a short-term once-off solution that I provide for a particular client. So I prefer, I'm more flexible basically, or we are more flexible as a company when it comes to long-term business relationships as compared to a short-term once-off approach.
Makes sense.
Wow. So what do you know now that you wish you would have known then, or like when you were younger?
Go for all the big fishes sooner rather than later. So for me was, instead of trying to build your way up, build your way down. That's basically what I've seen, is that why do you go for the smallest piece? Why do you go for the smallest option? Go for that which makes absolutely no sense. So when we had no capacity to run a conference, we approached conference or event organizers to say, we've got the capacity of running your conference. So I knew even then that I was not qualified to do that, but we approached that. So for me, I should have done more of that if I look back at our journey, basically.
So good. What is your secret talent?
Humility, and the ability to bring people together. I think that very few people have that talent within our industry. I can only think of a handful of people, yourselves being one of them, obviously.
Nah. But
very few people.
Not even close with you.
A lot of people want to be the superstars. Very few people want to create superstars out of people. So for me, humility is a big, big advantage that I have, and the ability to bring people together for a common cause. We just launched this amazing campaign called Women in IK, and that we've got over 150 women from all over the world, and it's exactly that we put other people at the forefront of the amazing work that they get to do, or they do in the IK industry.
Oh, you are so kind. And we're going to feature that. We're going to talk about that at the end just for a hot second, because you so graciously came into Rachel and I, and we were like, what? Are we this cool? And so we were like, this is so cool. We did not know we were this cool. So we'll touch on it at the end. But usually people are like, I can wiggle my ears at the same time. And yours is like such a beautiful talent.
Yours, okay,
so what are you excited about today?
The level of excellence the IK industry is forced to operate on as a result of the COVID-19 impact, that a lot of practices were very complacent over the years. And so COVID-19 and how it came about, I think it has forced a lot of practices to level up, to raise the standard of operations within their practices and get them to the level that it's supposed to be. So I'm excited about that, because it means a lot of the work that we have been doing over the years, it's now we're going to start seeing the fruits of that going forward. So I'm very, very excited about that.
How do you want to make the world better?
Lift as many young people as I possibly can up from all over the world. That's, for me, that's my biggest passion, that I want to see young people doing things that people never thought were possible. So I'm a big advocate for young people. So if I can lift all of them up within the eye care industry and outside of the industry, I would have done my job.
Ah, so good.
So I wanted also, you know, like we said, we were going to kind of comment on this Women in Eye Care that you have put together.
The campaign.
I mean, there is, it's an entire 2-month campaign, and the video will be attached in our kind of, kind of description here. It is just incredible to see how many women all over the world are just making a difference in eye care. And you truly have spotlighted so many beautiful people from all over the place. And I'm so excited to learn about each and every one of them. And I just want to thank you for putting in the work. Like, I mean, people can talk the talk, but you continually put in the work.
Thank you.
And I mean, you have an incredible video and story on Black Eye Care Perspective that we'll also link here that truly, you know, impacted my heart in
so
ways
good.
just to understand, just to kind of hopefully have a glimpse into how you have been impacted in this world. And so,
thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. The thing is, our strength is in our diversity, you know.
Yes.
So if we can embrace each other's diversity, whether it be male to female, whether it be black and white or Indian and colored and Chinese, whatever, we need to embrace our diversity and see it as a strength and not see it as a division. So that's, for me, it's so important that we constantly fight for that. We fight for just everyone having a seat at the table, everyone knowing that they are valued, everyone knowing that they play a significant role and they are appreciated for that role. And so for me, that was the reasoning behind the campaign. You guys are the heartbeat of this incredible industry, and there's no way we cannot celebrate you guys. You guys are phenomenal. You guys are powerful. You guys are incredible. Oh. And so for me, I'm like super excited about this campaign and about the future of eye care as a whole. And I'm so grateful for this platform that what you guys are doing, you have absolutely no idea how impactful it is. So I wish you guys success on lunch date with Rachel and Kate, and that for the rest of 2020, you will see your platform supernaturally increase to greater heights, that Africa is going to benefit. You need to have a division of Rachel and Kate on the African continent.
We'll work on it.
Sounds good.
I love this. Thank you so much. How much you bring to this table? Oh, I love it. Well, I wanted to say thank you again.
Thanks for the pizza.
Yes, this was a great pizza.
So
for
delicious
lunch today. So good.
Thank you very
All
much.
Right.
Thank you.
Holy crap, Rachel! I am completely changed.
I know. I got goosebumps a bunch of times when he was talking.
Yeah,
it was great.
Like, I think as associate optometrists, I think we know the amount of work that we put in to understand and knowing the business side of things is, I think, a lot. But I had no idea what I didn't know, and this was just such an incredible interview.
Some points that I really took away was like, what are you doing that you're not being paid for? And then you can take that into the negotiation. Cause like nobody's paying me to do the social media for my company, but they should be. And
yeah,
I'm definitely going to bring that up when we renegotiate. And also he was like, the most important things are like having strong leadership, having a company culture. We need to work on those things in my office.
Yes. I literally felt that. Like, I can honestly say that I think I know what our vision is at the practice, and like I feel like I buy into that, but I've not seen it written down. Our vision is to give vision.
Yeah.
Really, even though I am not in charge, I want to be able to create a culture of people around me that's all about positivity and all about like educating one another so we can become our best selves.
So good. It was great. Thank you so much for speaking with us. Be sure to check out his Women in Eye Care
Women in Eye Care campaign. And you can, I mean, ways you can find this is, one, by following his Instagram
Vision Street.
With a Y.
Which is V-I-S-I-O-N-S-T-R-Y-T. So that's pretty cool. And then you can also follow him on Instagram at Obi Malope, O-B-M-A-L-O-P-E. So much good stuff. And then Ifrica, so I-E-Y-E-F-R-I-C-A. So like Africa, but with I at the beginning. Also a super cool resource. Mm-hmm. So you really can't, I mean, you really can't go wrong. He's got so much good stuff out there. So much yep. good stuff. All right.
Well, we did it.
Until next time. Bye.